G3. The Model of Being and Its Universal Laws. Number 20A.
We considered together yesterday the main category of capitalized term, namely the dimensional sense of science, divine science, absolute Christian science, and Christian science. And we had just taken a short overall view. And I can do that because I have said, don't forget to get a better insight into the chart by studying the book on the four levels of spiritual consciousness. And then when you have done that, have an enlarged sense by taking those tapes on the 1973 New York tapes, and there are other tapes from the other teachers on various subjects of the chart. It is a very important subject, and therefore we cannot give too much attention and love and our whole heart to this very subject. Now, today I want to take the next main category of being of the capitalized terms, namely the fourfold operational sense of being, Word, Christ, Christianity, and science. And actually, I have no intention whatsoever again to go into it in any depth, but rather what I would like to do is to give a sense why this operational sense is important. What are the points that we have to watch and to keep in mind so that the main points will stand out? So when we do a more detailed analysis then at home, that we don't forget those main points. So we come to the operational sense of the foresight of the Holy City. And we know that this is actually the climax of the Bible. Everything seems right from the beginning to be a search after the city of God, and only in the last book of the Bible, in Revelation, right at the end, at the second last chapter, John the Revelator shows the importance and the symbolism of that city which came down from heaven. It was the New Jerusalem. It was not the building. It was not the material structure. It was a divine structure coming down to earth, showing that there is a four-sided operational sense, which Mrs. Eddy then interprets as Word, Christ, Christianity, and science, as that operational sense, as that divine infinite calculus that would enable us to compute the ideas of the synonymous terms in a concrete and definite way on each level of the science levels. Now, when we consider that only at the end of the Bible shows that high symbol, then we wonder what has taken place before thought has been ready to accept that divine infinite calculus, that holy city. Though they were always out for that city right from the beginning of the biblical story, and so it is therefore of great interest for us always to see how a higher insight has come about, how it developed. Because we know that what has developed in the human history or in the history of the development of the spiritual idea is always the same law and is always the same order as it develops in each individual. So it is so that we can take the result and what has been found out by the forerunners, but we should always see the history of it, because we are going through the same development. So spiritually, we can see that going out of having a mortal consciousness, of not having really a divine infinite calculus with which to work out things, we see that humans have a human calculus with which they try to work out their lives. They are going out from the very counterfeit of the divine infinite calculus. We also constantly calculate out our lives. We constantly think, if I do this, then that and that will happen. If that and that will happen, that will have some kind of an effect which blesses me, which is of advantage for me, which will do this and that and the other. This is the way we are thinking humanly, that we know that any step we take at the beginning, we calculate that it will have a certain effect, and hopefully it has that effect which we are hoping for. Very often it doesn't have that effect, and then we have to retrace our step and think, well, I have to calculate a bit different. So actually, the human calculus, or the calculus of the human mind, is something with which we are aware, with which we are acquainted right from the beginning. You can see that already with little babies who not even can talk, they already calculate. They know exactly when they have to cry and to draw the attention of the mother to them. They know all that already. It is an inbuilt, erroneous calculus that has to be corrected. And so the Bible, who we take as that book that is showing us the purely spiritual way of working out mortality, to work out the Adam dream. We take that Bible as a guide, so to say, for learning to exchange the human calculus for the divine calculus. So that the Bible as a whole is a long history of a few thousand years of spiritual research to find out the true calculus. So the Bible does not only give us right pattern of the Bible through the 7 days of creation, some indication of the nature of God, which afterwards we know symbolized the seven synonymous term as the nature of God. But right in the beginning, it also shows that there is a human calculus, the Adam dream, and that within that Adam dream, within that second record of creation, was already intertwined the fourfold calculus as, so to say, an advanced idea that just breaks in a faint way to say, look here, you can get out of that Eden, if you see that out of Eden flow four rivers. And if you take the glossary and see how Mrs. Eddy interprets those four rivers, we can see that they symbolize already in a faint way what we call the Word, the Christ, Christianity, and science. So in the midst of the Adam dream in the Bible, right at the beginning, we have, so to say, adumbrated there already a faint sense of the holy city. There it is shown as the four rivers coming out from Eden, from a central point, from a central principle. So that for that Adam dream, we have a solution, not only through seeing the true nature of God through the seven, but we also must see that the true nature of God is operative, that it has an operational sense built in, so that the seven synonymous terms are not just a static concept which just says that's the way God is, full stop, period, but it says this is the nature of God through the seven synonymous terms, and I'm going to show you how the seven synonymous terms are operating in an infinite calculus, so that there is infinite newness and infinite advancement. If we have now this in view, so to say, if we look at the Bible from the vantage point of that Eden, for out of which flowed four rivers, and see how that idea of a fourfold divine calculus is supplanting the human calculus, then we can see in an overall view that actually the Bible story has the order of the four sides of the holy city. I set the order, and I introduced the four as an order, because we also have to see that those four sides of the city are not just four concepts that we can use any way or in any sequence whatsoever we like, but that we also have to see the law that reigns within those four, and therefore order is heaven's first law. What is the order of development? Once we have the order of development, then naturally we can look at the fourfold calculus from a different vantage point, from the vantage point of being, which then is no more a process, but then is just a timeless, spaceless a calculus of being. So for the students, therefore for us, we are students of a science, we are on the way, we are not yet at the goal, we are on the way, and as long as we are on the way, we need to know the ordered steps of spiritual culture of our consciousness. Therefore, when we look to back to the Bible, we can easily see that for a long time, the Bible is speaking from the point of view of the Word. Though here and there naturally is intertwined something of the other side of the Holy City, because the Word does not stand by itself. It always reflects in some way the Christ and Christianity and science, because these four terms are synonymous. Therefore, they cannot be separated in watertight compartments, but they always blend. But the accent that we see very clearly is that the Bible, up to the historical books of the Bible, say up to Samuel, Kings, especially up to Samuel and so, we see the historical account of what God is and how God presented itself and revealed itself. And so we have a great sense first at the beginning of the Bible presenting really God as the Word of God. It's always there where we find the term, and God said this and this and this. Just think of the 7 days of creation. Every day of creation starts that way and said, and God said. So it is laying down the Word. It's laying down what God says about himself, what he is. And this is true right through the historical books up to the point where we've come into the prophetic era. So we can see that there is also a point coming where we have an optimum of the Word, and therefore that optimum of the Word can no more be more optimized. And as we have seen, that when something has optimized, that it begins to change its structure. So suddenly, with the prophetic age, we have a completely different approach to Israel and to the history of Israel. Up to that point, Israel was constantly led by the Lord, and God led them. You see, it was always the Word where God presented himself and said, "You look here, I'm of this and this nature, and if you obey that nature, then everything will be fine." And so Israel tried to obey, sometimes not to obey. When they obeyed, everything went fine. If they didn't obey, things went wrong. So it was always a question of adhering to the Word first. And so the history of Israel was a successful history over a long period. The trend of it was successful. But then suddenly, with the advent of Samuel, and then with the cry of Israel to have also a king, as other nations have a king, you can see that there is a complete break of the standpoint of the in the Bible. That suddenly now Israel said what they wanted. It's no more what God said to Israel, what Israel should do. Suddenly Israel said, we want this and that and the other. And the Lord God Almighty, if he's any way any good, then he's going to give us what we ask of him. Can you see a completely different change? It is the Antichrist that came in, that Israel was no more satisfied by going along with the idea, but was having its own ideal of how Israel should be governed, of what Israel should be. They had their own idea how God should protect Israel and guide Israel and give Israel everything, how to win the wars against all the nations and so on. And so the prophets came along and said, you are on the wrong track. You are absolutely on the wrong track. And it's now no more God, so to say, who dictated the history of Israel. It was now the prophets that came and said, we tell you what the nature of God is and how God comes to you. And so the prophets were now the central figures in it. And the prophets, as we know, were constantly voicing the Christ idea. How did they voice the Christ idea? They always first said, and the Spirit of the Lord came upon me. So suddenly the standpoint changed to the Christ. We know the Christ as that divine message from God to man. We know Christ as also symbolized through Emmanuel, which means God with us. They began to see that Israel could be one with the Lord if they would really allow God, the Spirit of God, come upon them, and if they would accept that oneness. So the Christ, as Mrs. Eddy then in metaphysical terms expresses, is the spiritual agreement of God and man. And this is something that Israel rejected. And so the prophet had to stem against that trend and had to say, no, you must do the very opposite. You must listen to God. God will come to you and dwell in your heart and put into your heart really the law of God. So you can't wish what you want to wish and then ask God to do it. That is not the way you can govern your country and your life. But as we know, Israel was not listening to the Christ, to the prophets. The prophets were rejected, they were ridiculed, they were put into dungeon, and so Israel went the wrong way, the way of the Antichrist. And they suffered the results of that Antichrist, namely right from the point that they were asking for a king instead of a theocratic government, as the prophets like Samuel wanted to introduce. Samuel was the very first great prophet, so to say, that said, God can reign over Israel through the Christ idea and not through people, not through a king. But Israel rejected it. It's one of the most heartbreaking speech that we can read in the Old Testament, when Samuel gave a speech to Israel when he, so to say, abdicated from his prophetic mission and showed them that he was trying to give Israel a theocratic government, and that he reproached Israel that they wanted to have a human government, a government of king, and he told them bluntly and frankly what they will lose if they go that way. But Israel didn't listen, and so they had right from that point on, after Samuel and David and Solomon, the whole kingdom fell to pieces and never recovered up to now, up to this date. Israel was never any more an independent state. They had their kings, but they were always subsidiary. Can you say subsidiary? They were always under the government of the neighboring kings. They had to pay tribute to the Assyrians, to the Babylonians, to the Egyptians, to the Scythians, to the Persians, and so on, in order to survive in any way. But they were never a free people anymore. So the prophets came and asked them, come back to God. That was their war cry. Turn to the Lord. Go again to the word of Christ. Turn to the Lord. Let yourself be led by the Lord. And so he said, if you don't do that, then the Lord will come and will overturn and overturn and overturn until it comes whose right it is. See, you hear very clearly, constantly, the Christ mission, the Christ office, that says that God translates himself constantly to every level of human experience, be it in the individual, be it in the tribe, be it as a nation like Israel. That doesn't matter. The Christ works that way, and he will come and overturn until it comes whose right it is. So this was a great attempt. Now, not going that way, not obeying the order of the word and then the Christ, what Israel really wanted is to go right from the word to Christianity. They wanted to state, look here, we are the chosen people. As if a Christian scientist today would say, man is a spiritual idea of God. And so they said, we are the chosen people. And as a chosen people, God has to do that what we as a chosen people feel is right to be done. And so they asked God to do what they want to do. Just as we will see later on, as the spiritual idea of God, we ask of God to do that which we feel is divine, which we feel is right, which we feel is the high ideal. And so try to sidestep really the link between the Word and Christianity, namely the Christ. And that Christ period, that kingdom and prophetic period in the Bible, is a tragedy. You know the tragedy. They lost practically every war that they led. They had to pay tribute. They were always under the suzerainty of other kingdoms. You know what suzerainty means? Under other kingdoms. Finally, not even that was enough. They were led into the Assyrian captivity, the northern Israel, and then later on, the southern part of Israel, Judah, was brought into the Babylonian captivity, and there were they dispersed over all the lands. And only much later on, when the Persian king took over in Babylon, they were allowed to return, but they were never really anymore an independent nation. Then afterwards the Greeks came, and afterwards the Romans came, and finally Jerusalem and the temple was again destroyed, and that up to now. So we can see that apparently the Christ concept is something that the human mind does not like to accept, that it resists the Christ very much. Because within us is constantly a material calculus at work that instead of the Christ has its own ideal and not Christ's ideal. Its own ideal, its own desires, its own motives, its own goals, and ask God to fulfill those goals. and says, well, God, if you are as mighty as you say you are, and that you are really God Almighty, then you better get busy and fulfill what we ask from you and make those demonstrations which we feel are the right demonstrations. You see, that is going against the Christ. And it has taken a lot of suffering, a lot of disappointment in that period of the prophetic age and the kingdom age. Until then, we see that finally we had a third period coming in with the New Testament, where finally Jesus said, well, I don't need to be a prophet, I am the Christ. Whereas the prophets who could see through that false human calculus and were trying to present the divine calculus, they always would see that in the future there would come really that Christ representative that would be strong enough and powerful enough to wake up Israel. And so they prophesied the coming of the Christ, which actually is the prophesying of Christianity, because Jesus as the Christ was demonstrating Christianity. So the main accent on Jesus is not that he was the Christ. The main accent is that he was using the Christ and demonstrating the Christ and living the Christ, and that is Christianity.